The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, so the strike is over.
I don't know.
The WGA, the writer's strike. Like, yeah, it's tentative. Like, that's like the hot word on the street.
The hot gas. But as the auto manufacturer, you know, not the manufacturers, but as they go head to head with the workers, that's some hot strike action. Mm-hmm. The people are rising up, all right? And we're not taking it from you anymore.
I think it's amazing. Keep it up. Keep up the striking. Let's get what we want. Let's get what we deserve as workers. Boy, oh boy.
In other news, Brooke attempts to make money. In Brooke tries to make money corner over here. I had a really good week on OfferUp selling furniture.
Very nice. What'd you get rid of?
Well, it made me a little sad because it was my beautiful dining room table.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice one. But you know what? She'll be happy in her new home. Dining rooms, tables come and go, you know.
They do. And, you know, when I'm sure anyone can relate when you're at the point of selling your belongings, you're like not doing great. Right. And then we're having a tough time, you know, like it's just the truth financially, right?
Yes.
And so it hurts. You're like, okay, I was going to hang on to this so that maybe one day when I had a place with a dining room again, like I love this table, but you're like, it's been 3.5 years with no fucking dining area and I can get nice money for it. But I had a moment where this one lady wanted it and I just did not like the cut of her jib and I lied. And I said someone else came to get it, that I'd made a mistake. And then, like, she was badgering me. And I was like, I don't want her to have it. And it
you don't have to, like this is, it's the people that come out of the woodwork when you have things for sale and the aggressiveness of it. It's totally up to you. It's almost just like how hard it is just to, like, buy a house and people write these, like, beautiful letters. Or you'll just be like, I don't like that person. I don't want to sell them my shit, you know? It's fine.
And it was because I'm really not sentimental about any of my other stuff. It was just because this was my, like, I'm a big girl now, first dining room table, homeowner, you know, and boy, have things changed. But I think it was just the me wanting it to go to someone who had that same energy that, like, I had when I bought the table. And I think this lady was going to turn around and sell it for more money.
That's where I was going. Of course she was.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyways,
so it went to a nice couple and she ended up being a Dutch girl also.
Oh, amazing. I love that. Good, good.
Yeah,
well, at least you're kind of like, you're paying it forward and you got paid at the same time, you know?
Yes. So welcome to Sidework Podcast.
Hi.
And my mental breakdown. I'm your host, Brooke Van Poplin.
I'm your other host, Andrea Wallace.
Do you guys want to buy things from my home? Yes or no? I've got fun clothes. I've got too many purses. I've got a bunch of Sidework Podcast t-shirts to unload.
Everything's for sale.
Strange times. But then I sold an old, a really cool old vintage chair for $1.25, which...
Hey.
I love it. So I had a good selling weekend out of the old garage.
Nice. I mean, it almost does kind of make you want to like lean into be like being that aggressive lady who like wants the table really bad. So then you can turn around and like, you know, but I think if that's the case, like you also have to, if you're going to turn around and do it. Plus your table was in like really amazing condition, obviously, you know, so it's like.
I knew the right person who understood like that it's a true like 1940s vintage piece was gonna appreciate the price tag on it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, guys, you know, are you following us on TikTok? Are you enjoying our TikTok? Are you following us on Instagram? Did you like and subscribe?
Did it all the things. Go to all the things. Have you been liking to, I don't know, like, because I always run the ads. I don't run the ads. Sorry. I play the podcast on Spotify and then on Apple's just to see if the ads are hitting, if they're being placed. And I got to say it. We're just being attacked with Juvederm, Botox. First, it was lip fillers a year ago. But I don't know. They've done the demo and they decided we all really need Botox.
Yep. That's so weird. You know, I get the emails like every week that are just like, approve this ad and nothing. I mean, sometimes if you skip a week, they just are like, I guess we're going to run it, you know.
Yeah,
sometimes
totally.
They just slip through the cracks. But I have never been like, I approve this Juvederm Botox. Like ads.
So. I know. We're not approving it. It's just sneaking in there. Whatever. You know what? So I got approved for TMJ Botox, which is a huge deal. My insurance is covering it. It is saving my life. It is like really, truly wonderful because to go and pay out of pocket, they have to put so much goddamn Botox into your jaw muscles because it's a big boy, you know?
Yeah.
They're really strong. Like I could crush walnuts with this jaw, honey. You know what I'm saying? So it's so much out of pocket to do it. And so I went in and it's at this doctor. He does like a fucking in and out, people out the door, sort of like they're lined up to get their paychecks. It's Botox Friday at the neurologist. And so everyone who's approved through their insurance, this guy's just like in there like with his.
He's just
ready to go.
He's like double fisted.
Yep. Just stabbing people's foreheads for their migraine, jaws for their. Oh, that looked amazing. That great, Brooke. Yep.
No, that's. I thought you just noticed you looked like you were jerking off two dicks at the same time. Yeah.
Wonderful. But I was in line waiting.
TikTok.
Oh, yep. You're welcome, social media. I wasn't even planning that. But I was waiting for my turn and I just heard, just like screaming and writhing and punching. And I was like, what the fuck? You know, and the nurse practitioner, she was like, have you had Botox? I was like, yes. She's like, okay, so you know that that's not how someone reacts to it?
Yeah.
And I was like,
someone probably
said
needle phobia. Who knows?
Yes,
yeah, for sure.
It was a 90-year-old woman with extreme needle phobia who was screaming every time. And they were trying to treat the poor woman for migraine, you know, or whatever, but she was in there. And then she came out and, you know, because when your skin gets real thin as you get older, like she looks a little bloody and bruised.
Sure.
Just
and
from
like,
the.
But then the Botox bulges because it has to settle. So I'm sure, you know.
I was like,
yeah,
I'm next, I guess. And then I got stabbed in the jaw. Anyways, should we get into some headlines?
Yeah, let's do some headlines. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, in news that should come as no surprise to anyone, on the Eat This, Not That website, I found a great article saying that basically Cracker Barrel is losing customers in 2023.
No.
I know. Basically, they have boiled it down, the company itself, so the CEOs at the top, have boiled down the declining number of customers to four different topics, and we'll get to a few others that I think they missed. So first of all, CEOs who they've run the numbers, they realize inflation, it's been a tough year, and the reason numbers are declining is consumers are more worried about money.
Sure.
And for whatever reason, it's only affecting Cracker Barrel. All right. They say also number two, that their marketing was lacking.
Okay. You know? I mean, yeah, I've never seen an advertisement for a Cracker Barrel in my whole life. It's all word. It's a word of mouth situation in my world.
Or interstate freeway. You see a Cracker Barrel off the freeway.
Yeah. That's your advertising. Yeah.
There you go. That's how I learned about Waffle House also, right?
Uh-huh.
Littered all over the freeway. I have not ever seen a Cracker Barrel commercial, I don't think.
No.
Huh. Anyways, I've seen very funny TikToks about Cracker Barrel.
Yes.
But basically, they didn't put the money in. And they're realizing maybe if we don't tell people about this restaurant and we're assuming everyone knows about it, that's, you know, guys, you can't be a secret. Cracker Barrel can't be a secret. So then on the flip side, the third reason they're saying that the advertising competition from other quick serve, you know, sort of chain restaurants has been fierce.
Fierce.
Blowing old Cracker Barrel right out of the water. I know.
Totally. Taco Bell really is overshadowing the Cracker Barrel ads. Yes. I get it.
Cracker Barrel. Have you thought about putting Flamin' Hot Cheetos in one of your dishes? Anyways.
Or getting a signature Mountain Dew flavor.
Exactly. And number four, they copped to it. They said, you know, there's probably room for improvement in the guest experience.
What, you don't want to play that weird peg game every time you come into the Cracker Barrel? Oh, boy. Yeah, now, it's a real situation in there.
Well, they forgot number five. Their food is awful.
Mm-hmm.
I know people love it. I know that they're going for, you know, when you are looking for that quick in and out sort of chain restaurant. And if you're going like, hey, I want seafood, therefore I'm going to Red Lobster, or I want American diner style, so I'm going to Denny's. And people are like, I want the Southern comfort of Cracker Barrel. People love the comfort of it, right? But I have eaten there. I used to take my grandmother. That's the only place she wanted to eat. So I would take her out on little dates and we would go out. I have eaten at Cracker Barrel many times, and goddamn, they can't even do the staples right. They can't even do right by them.
Yeah, it's a real monotone color palette, you know, like everything. And maybe that should be number six. Let's make that number six. Like, we didn't brighten up the food palette, you know?
Yeah, just a plate of like lumpy brown stuff with like over stewed anemic looking greens. Cause it's like people want to go get the collard greens and get that country gravy and all that stuff. And everything just ends up being a grayish brown color.
Yeah. And this is not like a low country. This isn't like a soul food type of place. Like, obviously this is a real, like, you know, I think number seven coming in hot. I think the big mistake was not all the chairs need to be rocking chairs.
Yes, even at the table.
Even at the table specifically. Yes. Like, they have all the rocking chairs out front. Move those rocking chairs inside. Make it like you're on a ride. Boy, oh boy, you'll get people lined up outside the door. Guarantee it.
If the Cracker Barrel's rocking, you better come knocking. You
better
know what
come knocking.
You better
number
come
eight.
Knocking.
Number
racism.
Eight.
Racism.
This is just me.
Here
we go. I'm firing all cylinders. Number eight. Put two gift shops on either side of the dining room, so you have to exit through the gift shop no matter what. You know, more sales on the side. People are buying more rock candy on their way out, or, you know, like, what else can you buy there? Like a friendship bread starter. That seems like the kind of thing that they would sell at Cracker Barrel.
All sorts of goodies you can get. I mean, and then obviously, like, I did just kind of yell out the word racism, but number nine is a problematic romanticizing of a bygone era where not everyone had the same rights to exist in America.
Yeah, it really does have like a we're deep in the depression kind of like feels, you know, like
it was great. There this TikTok, I have to find the user, it's so funny, but it was a black guy doing a POV of like walking in to a Cracker Barrel, and he was like having a panic attack and whip panning his camera to like all the weird gifts and old timey South stuff, and he was like, oh, and he was pretending like he was having a meltdown, and then it cuts to him at the table just chowing down the food and is like, I forgive it all, you know,
I mean, number 10, I've never seen any crackers in any barrels at Cracker Barrel. I'm just going to say that. Huh. What if they just really like hit it over the head?
Nail on the head with that one. Mm-hmm. So that's a little advertising tactic. That one's for free, Cracker Barrel CEOs.
Yeah, we have
if you're
ideas,
out there
guys,
listening.
Come at us or don't come at us, you know. Like, in a positive way. Like, you know, our people will call your people. Don't just at us. Yeah, for sure.
You got a favorite dish at Cracker Barrel? Want to prove us wrong? Do you have a hot tip? Should we order this and sub that and somehow maybe enjoy our meal? Get at us, okay?
Should we locate a Cracker Barrel within our radius? I don't know where the closest one is, but let's find out.
Probably somewhere in Nevada.
Most likely.
We'll see. Now, okay, so here's this other fun headline if we want to go through it with me, Andrea.
Yeah, for sure. This headline is, it's like, what are we going from? It's the alcohol Florida's ordering the most is what I have. It's basically we're breaking down in the warmer months. You may find yourself out to eat is what they're saying. You know, but this is, wait, hold on. This is just saying like who drinks what alcohol in what state.
Exactly.
That's what this article is saying. Yeah.
It was an attention grabbing headline, but they actually break down the sort of misnomers and you'd be surprised which states drink a liquor or possibly an ale that you wouldn't affiliate with them. So basically they thought for sure that the most that would be drank just in general would be beer across the board. And that in Wisconsin, that would be the truth. But it turns out Minnesota are the frickin' beer drinkers, even though Wisconsin has all of, you know, the they beer.
They border each other. So that's nice.
Mm-hmm. But they roughly 53% more beer per business than restaurant goers in any other state. And that is in the state of Minnesota.
Wow.
Kansas and Pennsylvania didn't really hit their numbers. And then Kansas. Okay. So basically served an upset to Kentucky. Kansas is where bourbon, aka whiskey, was more popular, and then followed by Ohio, but not in Kentucky.
That's weird. But Ohio apparently is favoring hard seltzers more than anything. Ohio sold 160% more hard seltzers per restaurant than any other states.
That's crazy because Illinois is where White Claw is from.
Ah.
And that's what put White Claw on the map.
Ohio's got to be like all the college kids ordering it, right?
If we want to break it down for a minute, I think I'm glad that I came up in the malt liquor phase of drinking bad, cheap booze because I could only drink so much and then I would just throw up and stop.
Totally.
I can't even imagine spending an entire day slamming hard seltzers.
I mean, look, if you're like, If you're camping, if you're out on a boat, if you're expected to day drink and kind of like you need something low alcohol and you don't want to drink beer all day and you have to like, you know, that's kind of where it comes into play for me personally. But I do think it's like going, I'm not going to go out to eat and order a hard seltzer. And actually, I found it when I was just in, and this is my fucking bubble LA dumbass. Like when I was in Omaha, I was out and I was like, oh, they sell hard seltzers here. My little LA brain was like, I can get a $4 hard seltzer and not an $18 cocktail. Wow. You know,
I'll do it.
But you know, I think that is why. Yeah. Anyway, but vodka was the most popular spirit in nearly every state, except in Arizona, California, Colorado, Georgia, Hawaii, Louisiana, New Mexico, Texas, and Utah. They were more tequila.
We are the tequila people, but the most tequila of all the tequila people is Texas.
Yeah,
no
that
lies,
makes sense.
No lies detected.
Yeah, they consume 119% more tequila than other diners in any other state. Whatever. Challenge me, though. Huh? Us?
Ooh.
We like tequila.
We do. We are tequila people. And then this is not really that big of a shocker. The Atlantic coast with the wine drinkers. But more so in Massachusetts. 72% more, where I'm like, I'm surprised they're not having a beer with a chata. You know,
I don't know. Maybe they're having like a nice glass of, you know, red table wine with a red sauce.
Maybe,
I don't know.
I'm seeing like a drunk Massachusetts, a masshole mom, you know, having a yellow tail. Just having
tail. Or like, you know, get on board with like my sister and my mom and get your boxed wine, you know. Carry it with you everywhere you go.
Carry it. Yeah. It's for wine drinkers on the go. By the way, this information came from the POS system in all the restaurants called Toast, which many of you might have worked with. So that's how they were able to tabulate, you know, people who dine in, drink,
taking
what have
your
you.
Data and making it a hilarious bit on our show.
And then a few other fun facts. New York is a gin state. They drink the most gin.
Huh.
And then Hawaii, rum. Hello,
sure,
Mai Tais.
Of course.
Makes sense. And then Wisconsin again, brandy. Because they apparently they add brandy to their old fashions.
Oh, that's interesting.
Andrea, you got to move to Vermont. That's the place where the residents ordered the most hard cider. Yeah, followed then by Oregon and Washington. Washington. Oh my
probably
God.
Michigan and Illinois after that, I'd imagine. Yeah,
amazing.
I'm here for the cider, as you know. It's
great,
delicious.
Great. That's. Let us know if you think that's true. I agree. Obviously, the tequila here in California is legit. I mean, California Tech, basically the Southwest, because it's like we were Mexico, you know, mm-hmm. at one point. We mm-hmm. love our tequila.
Oh, boy, do we love our tequila. And it's botanical-based, not grain-based. That makes, you know, so you're not, it doesn't make you feel. Like,
I don't get drunk. I can drink a lot and I also have a really bad hangover, but for some reason I can't really seem to get wasted.
I can get wasted on tequila, that's for sure. Anyway, that's a different episode. Boy, oh boy. Okay, well, let's get out of these headlines and into some server.
Submitted stories.
Stories.
Here we go. Hey guys, I've been listening to you for around 2 years or so. I heard Henry mention you guys in an older episode of Last Podcast on the Left when we were on the LPN network, and I've been hooked ever since.
Awesome.
Thank you. So my name is Lou, and I'm not a server, but I've worked in the food industry almost all my life. My longest held job was as a busser for 12 years in a family-owned American diner that mainly focused on breakfast. And let me tell you, I have a lot of stories from that place. Please keep sending them. Okay. But this particular one, I still remember quite fondly. So like I said, my place of employment at the time mainly focused on breakfast. So dinner wasn't as busy as the morning. This happened in, I want to say, 2016 or 2017. It was dinner. All was going well for the time being. At the restaurant, they have two dining rooms. The bigger one they mainly use and a slightly smaller one they only use for when the main dining room gets too full and or like a weekend and they had to do the spillover into the smaller dining room. So it was a steady dinner. All the servers were pretty busy. Then the doors open and dun, 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 a group of kids, probably just 1 or 2 years out of high school, come in. So we're looking at like 18, 19-year-olds. I'm sure you guys can agree with me when I say you can usually tell when teenagers or adolescents come in, whether or not they're going to be good kids or little shits. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, I could tell these were going to be the latter. There were around 5 or 6 of them. They got seated in one of our round corner booths that can fit a 5 or 6 person party. The server they got was one of the restaurant owner's daughters. This server was good enough that she always made money, but she wasn't also one to take shit from anybody, including customers. And she also works out and trains in MMA, so she's someone I especially would not mess with.
Wow.
You should be able to wear, like, you know, whatever level belt you are.
Totally, right?
Like, to your restaurant job.
Yeah.
We watched Karate Kid last night. It'd be amazing if you're like brown belt server. Anyways.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's like a kinder version of Shooters in Colorado. Lauren
Boebert. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Open carry
we
restaurant.
We haven't even fucking unpacked that but shit.
It's gone.
Anyway, let's
it's
go.
Gone.
It's done. Yeah.
It tanked. She's tanked too. Anyways. So the dinner goes on like normal. The group of teenagers are loud, obnoxious, but overall nothing too bad. But then it came time to pay. Server dropped off the check. I could see the kids pulling out their wallets and piling money on top of the check. They start to get up, and as they leave, they mention to the hostess that they left the money at the table. The server, instantly knowing that these brats were full of shit, ran to the table only to discover that they had only left enough money to partially cover the total. I'll tag you in.
What the fuck? Okay, but one of these idiots had gone to the shitter and barely finished as he tried to power walk his way out. The server immediately followed him out, and as the idiot had one leg inside his car, she grabs him, steers him back, and sits him down in the empty dining room and literally tells him he isn't leaving until him or his shitty little friends pay the rest of the bill. And I don't know their transportation situation, but I guess they had taken multiple cars and left this poor sucker to take the fall. So the poor kid sat there for like a good 30 minutes texting multiple people before someone came back to give him the rest of the money. Before he left, the server told them that cops frequently eat there and that they know a lot of them personally and that he was lucky they didn't call any of them. So the bill was paid and the kid was allowed to leave, but I don't know that they tipped or were not.
Probably, I'm going to assume not.
Yeah, for sure. Again, this is one of many stories I have from working there. I no longer work there. Now I'm the GM of a fast casual fish place and I'm loving it. Great. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you. But real quick, he says, I love how you guys talk about certain social issues involved with the food industry or just social issues in general. So I really think you guys should talk about the rising attacks on food vendors all over the country, but especially in Southern California. A lot of street food vendors, especially minorities, are being targeted by thieves, hateful bullies, and even local police. And it's all very tragic. And a lot of these attacks are pretty severe and traumatizing. I suggest you check out the Instagram account. You say this? I can't say this.
Yeah, I wanted to get this at an Enamorado Alex. So yes. It's spelled underscore. So it's spelled Enamorado Alex underscore.
Yes. So he's an activist that fights for the rights of food vendors and will confront the attackers in person and is trying to unionize them. Thank you. Godspeed. Good tips. And that's from Luis. Yes.
Luis. You let me know how you roll, buddy.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. And also thank you for the kind words and thank you for the great story and keep them coming.
Yeah. I mean, if your MMA server walked also, a kid back into the restaurant
and snaps to 12 years as a busser.
Right. I mean, yeah, let's not overlook that. The unsung hero. The person who knows how to do every job in the restaurant, the busser. But yeah, I love that the MMA waitress just like sat the kid down like mafia style in an empty dining room.
Totally.
We're gonna,
I feel like she's got like the, you know, in the movie Scrooge where like the giant hand of like the Ghost of Christmas Present like picks Bill Murray up and like plops him down. That's what I'm envisioning right now.
Oh man. God, I love speaking to Bill. Last night we watched Karate Kid and Groundhog Day. We were just having a good Sunday.
Wow. We've already been getting into scary movies. Like we watched The Hunger with Bowie and Susan Sarandon. It's Tony Scott's first movie. It's sexy vampire movie. Yeah, it's anyway.
Please, we wanted to thank you because your submission inspired this entire rest of the episode. We are going to talk about the thing as soon as we ask you guys to submit your server stories to sideworkpod@gmail.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we are back. So our topic of the day is street food vendors in Los Angeles and, you know, Southern California to some extent, because, baby, we've got the street foods.
Oh, yes, we sure do.
Since this is a bit more of a researched topic, this is one where Andrea and I can't just bullshit and pull facts and figures and opinions out of our buttholes. We looked to Eater LA, KCET.org, Wikipedia, LA Taco, which I love, and another great article from Esquire that helped us piece together the history, which is complicated and beautiful and tragic and sad.
Absolutely. And like, who knew? So like, who? Yeah, I didn't know. So here we go.
All right. So, Andrea, I would say with this topic, we discussed that if we wanted to do it true justice and if we were more dedicated to a, it could be 1 month or 3-parter. Long.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. But what we're doing is for those of you who don't live here and who aren't aware of basically the social ramifications and the history and just how much the street vendor is a very politicized and targeted sort of food seller, all in our larger, you know, our larger network of people who sell food and serve people for a living. We're going to give you the bullet points just so you can learn and go from there and hopefully do some more of your own research. Or if you come to California, absolutely stop by one of these hardworking people's food stands. So the street vendor, what is that, you ask? Okay. So basically it's any type of quick meal that, you know, a vendor can procure from a push cart. They can fashion an old desk into a service vehicle, put some wheels on it. We've seen when you go get the bacon wrapped hot dogs, right? Sometimes they're shopping carts with like a flat top on top of them and an open flame. They're kind of crazy. I mean, it can be a whole folding table set up on the corner, which would keep the seller a lot more stationary. And this can go all the way up to a motorized vehicle, which is known as a food truck.
Correct. Yes.
What are the things you can get on from a street vendor, Andrea?
Oh my God. You can get tamales. You can get tacos, which are my personal favorite. You can get elotes. You can get fruit. You can get hot dogs. You can get flowers. It runs the gamut. And now, you know, because it's become like a much more popularized, I'll say that.
You got it.
Endeavor, hot chicken, burgers, barbecue, like there's all, you can get pretty much any kind of food
anything
from a street
you
vendor
want
these days.
And since we are obviously focusing on the food aspect of it, I think it's worth noting that there are vendors who are set up on like Olvera Street or different areas. They sell makeup. They sell, if you need a quick pair of headphones, you know, so you can kind of get anything on the streets of Los Angeles. But we're focusing on the food because that's the delicious part. So, okay, essentially, street food vending began in California, actually right before it technically became a state. But this was in the 1870s with the recently migrated Chinese and Mexicans leading the charge with this delicious quick meal grab that you could do in the streets of basically all centered in downtown Los Angeles. And immediately the city tried to outlaw it. And it's going to be first of the many times that they have tried to outlaw or criminalize selling street food. But the food was just way, way too fucking popular with the people. And so basically the era of renegade fast food begins.
Absolutely. And a lot of this was, you know, like the railroad was like coming into town and like there were a lot of jobs coming this way. And it was like a stop on the way to go up to San Francisco to like if you were going for the gold rush, things like that, where people settled. So this is just, you know, the street vendors were the first people like on the scene to be like, you guys all need to eat. Right.
Which and maybe in other parts of the country, I'd have to go back and definitely fact check, but when we did the history of where diners came from, that also came from a little cart that would serve the third shift workers. When they got out, they could come up to a cart and get a hot cup of coffee and a sandwich. And so basically all the immigrants who've come to America created all of our best food and all of our best cultures. So anyways, this blew my mind and I loved it. So this is the birth of what were known as the tamaleros of Los Angeles.
Tamaleros.
So that's what they were called. They started appearing in LA basically around the 1870s. And then by the 1890s, the tamaleros, meaning tamale sellers, they dominated downtown Los Angeles and were spreading to the other cities around basically Southern California. So the competition spurred the innovation to, you know, sell the most and the best tamales. And this is an article in Esquire by Gustavo Arellano, who I love. He's a correspondent for KCRW. He's on all the programs. Everyone loves his coverage of Orange County, the whole OC area. He's very political and on point. Love Gustavo Arellano. So basically, these wagons, horse-drawn wagons, transformed into portable kitchens with functioning stoves on fucking wagons.
Nice.
And they would illegally tap into the city's gas mains and water pipes if need be. So on the outside of the wagon, they featured counters so as many as 8 people at a time could dine around the wagons. And I just love the vision of that. It's almost
me
like
too.
Almost like one of those horrible cycling bars.
Yeah, where you all cycle at this. Yes. There's like 12 people that cycle at the same time. That's exactly what I was thinking about. But just instead, you're just like stuffing fat, nice, moist tamales into your face instead. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You're just saddling up to the tamalero wagon. So the tamaleros sparked their fair share of controversy amongst business owners and city residents. We're talking about people who were proper brick and mortars are starting to get pissed. But they never got successfully banned. So by the turn of the century, the city had agreed instead to force tamale cart owners to pay for their operating licenses. Sort of like, let's get you above board. But also they knew this would be a way to weed them out by trying to make them cough up money for a license. But what it did was only help to destigmatize the markets for tamales without slowing it down, which is
great.
Really fucking cool. So Gustavo goes on to say that arriving strangers, first time in Los Angeles, were just like enamored at the presence of so many outdoor restaurants. But basically, again, like I said, the actual dining establishments in a building were getting real grumpy and pissy about it. So
I can't believe it took almost 60 years for the tamale cart trend to peter out. Like, you know, it's crazy to me. I mean, I'm also like, I wish I was around in those times.
We say that, but yeah,
no,
just,
we would be like, help!
Oh my God, I know. Wouldn't make it. But basically, so that kind of petered out for the tamale counters and the traveling wagons of deliciousness around the 1920s. But then in the 1930s, tacos, basically, I know, this is the Andrea era, you know?
Yeah,
I'm in my taco era. I mean, and when you think of Los Angeles, you have to be honest. You think taco before you think tamale.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just tacos were obviously all the rage with all of the Latin Americans who really lived here and were making, you know, our populace what it is. Basically, tacos became like, they had the stranglehold on street vending. But also, the thing I wanted to note is that in the beginning of this, and it's hard because you want to go deep in the history and not be insensitive, but Chinese migrants and immigrants were 100% another part of it. But at that time, there was actually a lot more racism and policing of their carts and their vending. And because they lived in areas of the city that were more, and these are the words from the article, ghettoized.
Oh, yeah.
It made them harder. Made it harder for them to get their carts into the downtown area. And then they also dedicated a huge part of downtown to be like Olvera Street and what it is now. And it just the favor and circumstances pushed more toward the Latin Americans and the Mexicans being able to dominate our food market as much as people counted on and did love a lot of what the Chinese vendors had to offer. But they also faced so much racism, as we'll get into.
Oh, my God. It's totally crazy. Like, even just reading about how, like, then Chinese vendors, instead of, like, selling on the street, were forced to go door to door to, like, sell their food. Like, which of course, who wouldn't give up, like, if that was the new law, right?
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. And you know, so, and it was also just a sentiment just to be like, oh, this is dirty food from unknown, swarthy, dirty people. You don't want to eat that. And just a lot of, you know, basically the racism and the sentiments around that traveling about. Anyways, so it's not that I'm trying to skip over or we're trying to gloss over the history of the Chinese migrants. It's just that's a whole other thing. Again, do some research. It's very interesting, but we didn't want to skip out on that. So same time. Still downtown, still love going there. Basically, when city officials realize like these street vendors aren't going anywhere, maybe we should adopt their business model a little bit and market it. They opened what we have, you know, as Grand Central Market, which what's the one in Philly? What's the big one in Philly? Like
the big
free. I can't think of it. Anyways, sorry. But when you have your downtown centers, which big cities have, that have all the food stalls, they have, you know, you can get your oysters shucked. You can go then to another stall and get a beer. You got someone selling Philly cheesesteaks. So this is our version of Grand Central Market.
Is it the Reading Terminal Market?
Oh, yeah. I've been there. It's awesome. Yeah, the Reading Terminal Market in Philadelphia. And then obviously downtown LA, there is urban manufacturing exploding everywhere. So people working downtown, building the skyline as we know it, people wanting to just walk off the job for a quick bite. And you know, keep it casual. Obviously, all of the train lines, as Andrea mentioned, were, you know, starting to converge downtown. Mm-hmm. And so that basically, you know, helped basically like create a renaissance for people to get fully mobile trailers at this time. They could attach their trailer to the back of their car and go out to where the workers were also, which is like I was talking about the advent of diners and Greek diners being like, hey, we're going to go. These people are working in the middle of nowhere. How are they supposed to get food or get fed? And then to pop up, and the novelty of that was just a huge hit with workers.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically having a quick bite under the open sky was just this huge part of American life by the 1940s. But then the 50s came along, and what happened, Andrea?
Fast food comes around. So with its speedy service and drive-through windows, you know, obviously giving the appealing option to enjoy reasonably quality, you know, food at an affordable price point that's, you know, you don't have to get out of your car. Many Southern California residents chose to spend their money on chains like McDonald's and like, you know, Glen Bell's Tacotilla, a.k.a. it's going to become Taco Bell, you know. But what's worse, fast food chains often co-opted the same meals that had previously been considered street food staples, right? So that right. homogenizes the, you know, and commodifies them and until they look like they're a far sight from the original product, right? So people are, something shiny and new is there. Obviously, we have the innovation of like the fast, how fast can you make burgers? How fast can you do that? Instead of just, you know, and big the golden arches. Obviously, they're making a big show out of it. So this makes food vendors like take a backseat for sure.
And this really truly is like the story of America. It's like who can basically kind of steal off the backs of the original,
oh,
you know?
Fuck heart. Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. like whether it's music, whether it's food, whether it's anything we know. But you can, though, say for corporations, you know, like Glen Bell's Tacotilla, which is the funniest fucking thing that's what became Taco Bell as we know
Dung.
It.
Dung!
Make a run for the border. God, we love talking about Taco Bell. And it was, I was this many days old when I found out it used to be called Glen Bell's Tacotilla. Never knew that. Really didn't. But you can say these huge corporations, though, bring Mexican food to the masses. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe only people in Southern California had ever had a taco. A place like Taco Bell, granted, they do the gringo style. But then, and if it gave someone a taste and wanted to explore more of these flavor profiles, then maybe they're more likely to come eat to an be like, authentic
oh,
taco.
Maybe I will eat at that like taco vendor that's been like stationed around the corner from where I live for probably 10 years every weekend now, you know? Yeah.
So anyways, it was just a real collision of basically innovation and a bunch of capitalism all happening at once. So the street vendors absolutely took a hit when fast food came to light. And the other part of it is like, okay, so obviously it's never gone anywhere. Our city is filled with street vendors everywhere you go. There are only a few areas that, from what I saw in these articles, are absolute no-goes all the time. You can't be near the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yes.
You can't be near, like, the Hollywood Bowl.
And that's a newer law. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was cracked down in, like, 2017-ish. Like, it was, yes. They used to be everywhere. I mean, there's nothing better than, like, you're about to get out of a concert, you're half-cocked on alcohol, and you can smell the bacon-wrapped hot dogs. Like, you know, like the smell just like lingers up the mountain and into your nose, into your olfactory. Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say that a bacon wrapped hot dog saved my life one time. they have been known to save lives. And you are. It's those push cart shopping carts. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And the ingenuity is something, because then it just has like a pan, like a sheet pan from an oven on top of it.
I know. It's like you're doing a sheet pan. It's like you're doing prep work in a kitchen, you know?
Yep. Yeah. But you're just pushing your hot dogs, and I don't know what the heat source is. I'm not going to ask questions.
It's
but
gas.
It's, mm-hmm. it's just gas. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it is sizzling these dogs and this bacon to perfection. They're able to saute the peppers that they throw on it then, and then all the mayo. They are so freaking delicious.
I know.
Give me all the hot dogs. So. All right, so I'm talking about that this is everywhere, but it has been a huge fight with a really troubled history for people who are coming from places like Guatemala, you know, Central America, South America. They're coming from everywhere because there might be so much political violence or corruption or just no opportunities, and they can come here and they can sell food that is representative of who they are, their culture, and then to also connect with other Latin Americans here who are like, this tastes like home, and it's a beautiful and for a thing.
A lot of immigrants, you know, what I read, this is their first job that they have when they get to the States.
And what else is possibly available? Because as we know, sometimes people are not above board. Sometimes people are not legal citizens in most cases.
Right. But sometimes you get trapped in a shitty restaurant where like the owner knows for a fact that you're illegal and threatens to call immigration on you all the time. Like I was just talking to a client about like she worked at a place. She's from Israel and she worked at a place like that. You know? Yeah.
I think just basically the point is these are really hardworking people with a dream. And what happened in this city is the criminalization of what they were doing, which when we think about it too, like you can put this on many stupid things in our culture. Like the fact that we try and call plants illegal, you know, cannabis mm-hmm. illegal. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking plant, you know,
right.
Or someone coming here to make you food that is love to them that can, you know, like it's their language, it's their personhood, and to just selling you food, we're like, let's turn them into criminals. So
right, absolutely. And you know, like 9 times out of 10 the people who are like making these laws are just like shoving tacos in their face all day, you
of
know?
Course they are, because
love the food, hate the people, right?
Not good. You gotta love the food and love the people, love their food. Mm-hmm. And so this obviously comes down from like different levels of bureaucracy and very like white expanded, you know, Los Angeles. You've got homeowners associations coming down, being angry that there is, you know, food being grilled anywhere in the proximity of their mansion. Small business owners who had a chip on their shoulder the entire time. Basically, they're like, you're allowing immigrant and their customs to flourish on the sidewalks. And they wanted it to basically make the street vending super duper illegal. And so the workers really banded together and really tried to push back against all these battles against them. They went to media outlets. They were attending council meetings, city council meetings. But basically, there were just all these really complex negotiations, compromises that were made, like halfway measures where it was like, you're sort of criminal, you're not, or your license expired, so I'm going to arrest you because you sold me a taco. And this went on with, which is these workers having like, they're like, go ahead and do it. It's just tomorrow might be the bad day for you. Mm-hmm. Like it was not clear cut. It's like, so everyone was doing it, but there's a chance you might get your whole, you know, set up, knocked over by cops and you go to jail that day. Then you come out and then they don't care that you set back up. So it's like, what is that? You know?
Yeah.
And so basically just the street vendors persisted no matter what. And it took basically the year 2008 was a big, big turning point where they got together with a bunch of different councils around Los Angeles. And they came together in the year 2018 to finally legalize street food vending. So it was street food vending. It was a 10-year battle to first. So it wasn't that it was legal. The best they could do was in the year 2016, just decriminalize it.
Right.
Which is another weird gray area.
So weird.
But you know why? Because they'd already been in talks for 8 years. It was Trump taking office.
Yes.
Who that was pushed the needle.
Yep. And they were like, we have to decriminalize this because he wants to make like all immigrants criminals. And the California was like, we can't do that. We can't be that person. So
we'll
decriminalize it.
Exactly. Because he signed like his first 30 days in office. He signed an executive order saying anyone who's an immigrant, one criminal offense and you'll be at the top of the list to be deported.
Right.
And so I love and I give so much credit, even though it's fucked up and it took a long time, but it was that moment when everyone converged together to say, we cannot have someone who is selling churros on the street be deported. That is a step even too far, even as shitty as we've been. So they agreed and they hustled to decriminalize. And then 2 years later, fully make it legal. But it still fucking sucks. It is still such a hard and scary job to do this work. There's so much pride and sweat equity that goes into doing these setups. And these vendors are still harassed all the fucking time, whether it's cops knowing that it's perfectly legal, just want to be dicks. It can be people from the community who know that they make their living taking cash from you and they'll mm-hmm. fucking punch you in the face and take mm-hmm. your entire day's wage.
Drunk assholes. That mm-hmm. that video that cropped up a few months ago of those stupid asshole like young college girls that were like drunk and like licking their hands and touching the food. Do you remember when that happened? I'm just like, what? Like, yeah.
So and it's a lot of racism. It is still like it is unhinged restaurant owners. It is unhinged people coming from their gilded castles and their neighborhoods to tell people to go back to their country, even though they do live here and this is their legal business. There's just so much fucking hate against street vendors in LA. And that's a really, really unfortunate truth that when you're like, did you watch that video? And I'm like, it's really hard to watch these videos.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The Instagram handle that we mentioned before mm-hmm. of like, you know, the guy. Yeah. It's really, really difficult to watch it. And I'm just like, of course, I'm just like, they're just fucking tacos. It's just fruit. Like, what
fucking
are we?
Chill, people.
What
right?
is like, yeah. Just like have a bite and relax. Like,
relax. It's LA. That's what makes this city and this area great. Because the other point, it is an economy. The street food vendors generates $517 million
wow.
in economy stimulus. And it is very much like it is an immediate potential to have a job for anyone who's newly immigrated. You could have veterans or people who are shut out of normal opportunities who are allowed to street vend as long as they've got their license and paperwork. But we've just got so much hate because we look at people as less than or not full citizens or you're from somewhere else and get off my streets.
I mean, these carts are also providing like nutritious, like fresh, lovely food to areas that may not have that.
Well,
you
that
know?
was part of the argument that helped push the needle in the favor of street vendors. You know, we have food deserts here in LA, as they mm-hmm. talk about in inner mm-hmm. cities. We have so many areas where you cannot get a decent bite to eat that isn't we were talking about a Stouffer's French bread pizza earlier from a Rite Aid, you know, where it's like you can only eat so much of that before you're like, I'm going to have a fresh cooked meal. Of
yeah, I'm
going to
go like
vegetables.
Walk around the corner and get like a cup of mango with like, you know, tahini on it.
Tahini
great.
All over it. Mm-hmm. Yum, yum, yum. Oh, tamarindo. But basically, so we can't tell this history and, you know, there's so much to brag about, but there's just such an ugly side to it where we have to, as a city and people, be awake to the fact that these people who are our most vulnerable, really, in the economy are being targeted unfairly and really aggressively. I think last summer was the worst summer on record with like 126 attacks on street food vendors.
Wow.
Some end up getting murdered, which is just wild and sad. Or you just have people where someone will take, I mean, there was just this horrible story of a guy got attacked in front of his neurodivergent 8-year-old daughter. They beat the snot out of him, took all of his money, took his car, and then also take their business, which is they'll run off with the cart.
Right. Or completely destroy it. You know,
or, yeah,
everything.
Or
yeah,
just
that's
smash
all you have.
It. And that is that is their brick and mortar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And it's not just business. Like people who are like, you know, robbing. It's like cops will come and destroy them. It's like
it can
security
be-
guards if you think you're in the wrong place. I watched a video that was like a food vendor just trying to like get cover from the rain and like got a bunch of shit
right.
from a security guard from like a strip mall and just like
right.
I don't, you know, it yeah.
It can be kids from your own fucking community who are just stupid pieces of shit too, you know? I think the pandemic and just everyone financially having a really tough time could possibly be feeding into, you know, people beating down on each other harder than they have. I mean, we've just seen people lose their fucking minds the past few mm-hmm. years. And so what do? We punch down on easy targets, right?
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
If you're also desperate for money, you're going, who's an easy person to take $40 from? And it's like the solo vendor who, you know, all you can do is shake them down. And so we didn't want to like tell you all this without including, you know, this. And we hate to sometimes like not have a solution because we don't know what a solution would be
right.
other than to know that it happens, right? To follow and get food news and cool cultural news from LA Taco. They're also so good at covering all the street vendor attacks. To know that this is legal what these people are doing. Yes. So if you see them being harassed, they have every fucking right to be there.
Yes, they do. And
you can run up and interfere. At least make someone believe there's someone who's documenting, that they have an ally, that you're like, I got eyes on you, you know. Because obviously, what are you supposed to do? If someone's coming with a gun or a knife, like, you know, obviously we're not going to be like vigilante hero in that situation. But I think the most important thing to know is it has been a hard won battle for our LA street vendors to be perfectly legal.
Absolutely.
And to know that they're within their rights to do what they do.
And, you know, I would just say, like, and if you know vendors near you, like, go
support
them out, meet them. I love the food vendor scene in this town, and I have seen like small operations go to giant operations. I'm talking like the new taco stand opens up. We try it. 2 months later, we drive by. They're 50 deep. You know what I mean? And it's the hardest work. It's like you have to basically like set up and break down an entire restaurant, like kitchen, every single night. Like
you cannot forget to pack an ingredient into the van. You know what I'm saying?
You cannot forget. You know, and I think I love how normalized it is here. And I want nothing but safety, you know, measures for everybody who because your people are, a lot of vendors are open late,
yes.
You know, and you're just out there on the street. It's like, it's not, you know, you're not an indoor space. It's not as safe, but like Asia, South America, like so many open food markets, like this is like night markets. This is the norm, you know?
It is. Yeah. And I think to know, too, that it's just like you can fight back against, you know, people in your neighborhood if they're starting to cause a stink about there was this big night market that got closed down near the Lincoln Heights area where it was a really profitable situation for many families where this had been allowed. What is it called? I'll look it up.
The alley one that was happening. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. This one was the Avenue 26 night market got shut down by Gil Cedillo. And the fact that to just listen to the loudest and angriest and probably whitest people in a neighborhood going like, we hear music. And when they had been complaining about the noise, basically everyone who was participating in Avenue 26 decided to turn down the music out of respect for everyone in the neighborhood, but that wasn't enough. They're like, well, actually, it turns out that was our excuse to get our foot in the door. We just don't want them here because we don't want their kind. And so it was a huge money-making opportunity for so many of these independent vendors. And it just got a big fence and cement blocks put around it with no notice one night. And everyone pulled up with all their product, all of their meat, all of their everything ready to buy and just took a huge financial hit. So there's just... it's a real hard, risky business. So I guess, yeah, our takeaway is like support it, tip well. Angel's Tacos. I fucking love going. I'll be 40 deep
so good.
And go get
it. We
have
one out here too. Now there's one by me and there's one by you. You know, and I just, yeah. And I do think a lot of this builds community, and like why the pushback is happening is just, I mean, it's just a shame.
It's fucked.
So support your local food vendors is all I will say. Buy the fruit, buy the tacos, buy anything they're selling, and you report back to us if you guys have, you know, any feedback, positive, negative, you know, obviously. Like, we're, if you have, you know, one-on-one experiences with us, let us know.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome, awesome recommendation, and I'm really, really happy because I got to do some research that I was not aware of as
That's
much as I think I'm aware. Yeah.
Of honestly doing this podcast with you, Brooke, is that we tap into so many topics where we are, I constantly have my mind blown by what we are learning and we're able to put out for our listeners.
100%. So 100%. We love the opportunity to do it and we hope you liked this episode. And if we missed anything major, get at us. You know, we're not professional researchers. We just have hearts of gold.
I know. We just want the best for everyone. So fucking leave us alone if you...
No, I'm kidding. You can tell us if we missed something or if we're stupid.
Please do. We learn from our mistakes. We're humble people. So great. Well, great episode, Brooke. You guys, again, server submitted stories, cyborgpod@gmail.com. Other than that, Brooke, you know what we say at the end of every episode.
Indeed. Godspeed.
And good tips.
Go get some yummy street food.
Yum. I'm starving now.
Starving.